I only hope that we never lose sight of one thing, that it was all started by a mouse.
Hello, everyone out there in podcast land. This is the Beyond the Mouse podcast, the podcast for all things Disney for NPR Illinois Community Voices and for the Front Row Network. For the 100th time, I am your host, Craig. I'm joined today by my co-host, Mr. Brett Rutherford.
Hello there.
And Miss Vanessa Ferguson.
Hello.
I cannot believe what we are bringing to you today. This is something when we had this opportunity come up, there are times where you're just so grateful for the opportunities that we've had. And I think we do need to take a moment. And I think what we should do is kind of save that for the end of the episode and after the interview today, kind of our reflection on where we are with this show and what this has become for the three of us. But I have to start off this episode by saying a lot of thank yous before we get into the interview. And my first thank you is to Brett Rutherford for not only coming on to this show, but I don't remember if you, a long time ago when we were going to talk Moana, I invited you onto the show and then you, and now that I think about it, I might have this in reverse and you'll have to correct me if I'm wrong, you two, but one of you brought the other one with you to that.
Brett brought me.
Okay.
I owe everything.
That's
to
what
Brett.
I thought. I thought for sure, but
do
then
you
I
mind,
wasn't.
Craig?
I didn't want to say. I didn't want to say it the wrong way. But Brett said, you know, we should bring Vanessa on to this as well. And that episode was just so great. And the relationship built from there. I know both of you from theater in town. We've done shows and whatnot together, but not nearly like this kind of a relationship where we could just talk Disney and do these shows and have this friendship. So not only has this podcast gone on for 100 episodes, but truly the friendship that comes from this with my co-host, I can't replicate anywhere else. So thank you, Brett, for bringing Vanessa along. Thank you, Vanessa, for saying yes to him when he brought you along, because it's just been absolutely incredible. And I will have time to talk about things and get kind of emotional after the interview is over, because I do want to get into today's interview. And it's actually a panel discussion. We're very happy to talk all things a Goofy movie and also to ask questions of their individual careers to the director of the film, Kevin Lima, to Goofy himself, Bill Farmer, and to Max Goof, Jason Marsden. Just absolutely incredible opportunity before us. Any thoughts before we get into the interview? We'll go to Vanessa first.
I'm just so excited to talk to Goofy. Not to get too emotional, but my dad, who has passed away, we always associated him with the character of Goofy. We got him the Goofy hat when we went into the parks, and he would just be so tickled that I'm getting to talk to Goofy today. Oh my gosh, what is life?
Yeah, just absolutely incredible. Brett, any thoughts before we get into it?
Well, when you mentioned that this might be a possibility, I'm like going, well, you can always ask, but which has been our mantra this past year. Thank you, Kevin. But yeah, so I'm really excited to talk to these three and see. Yeah. It'll be so cool to get them together and see what they, because I bet there's going to be some bantering back and forth and all that. So I can't wait. Oh boy. Oh boy. Oh boy.
Yes. And thank you, Craig, for helping. I mean, not only did you get us one amazing person, you got us three. You got us three amazing
people.
This
was your idea.
Yeah. We can't wait to talk to them.
Well, you know, like Kevin told us back on episode 57, he said, you got to ask for it. And that's what we did. And the day is here. So let's get right into the interview. This is our panel discussion, all things a Goofy movie, with director Kevin Lima, Goofy Bill Farmer, and Max Goof Jason Marsden. We are just so honored to have this great group of people here with us today to discuss all things a Goofy movie and other areas of their career as well. We're going to introduce them each individually. Vanessa, you have the first person you'd like to introduce.
Well, I have the pleasure of introducing Jason Marsden. Jason is well known for his roles in Hocus Pocus, Spirited Away, several films for the DC Universe, and of course, he's the voice of Max Goof in a Goofy movie. Welcome, Jason.
Thank you, Vanessa. Thank you, guys. Thanks for having me.
And Brett, you get to introduce our next guest.
It is truly an honor to introduce Disney legend Bill Farmer. Since the mid-1980s, Bill has voiced Goofy for Walt Disney Studios. He's also voiced so many memorable and roles for so many other films and voiced Goofy in my most recent favorite performance of his, Mickey and Minnie's Runaway Railway attraction at Disney's Hollywood Studios at Walt Disney World. It is so great to have you join us today, Bill.
Oh, it's my pleasure to be here. Thanks.
And now I get to introduce the last gentleman and a very special guest coming back to the podcast. If you want to go and listen to All Things Kevin Lima, you can listen to our interview with him on episode 57 of the show. But for our 100th episode, I thought we would do something really special and reach out to Kevin and see if he would be willing to come on to a panel with his fellow co-stars in a Goofy movie and talk to us about that. And we're just so excited that he said yes and actually helped us organize all of this. Kevin, of course, is the director of not only a Goofy movie, but also Tarzan and Enchanted, 102 Dalmatians. Just an amazing animator, amazing writer, amazing director. We're so happy to have back Kevin Lima.
It's so great to be here. Thanks, Craig.
Absolutely. And I have the first question. So this is going to be directed at all three of you, and we can take it kind of one at a time. But this movie, a Goofy movie, has become such a phenomenon. And we know each of you have attended panels and conventions and have a chance to meet with your fans. Could you each speak about an interaction that you might have had with a fan, or maybe a couple of interactions with fans that you've had around a Goofy movie? And I'll go to Bill first.
Well, it is of all the hundreds or thousands of times I've voiced Goofy over the years, this is number one, really is among fans. It is the gift that keeps giving. After, 95 is when it came out. There's never a Comic-Con or any other get-together that I don't get at least one question or comment where someone says, I couldn't talk to my dad until we saw a Goofy movie. It was a real bonding experience for me and my dad. I've heard that over and over and over again. And that just thrills me to no end. It's it's a great movie. It was a lot of fun for me. And I got to know Jason and as almost my son, actually. And my real son was around 5 when it came out. So it was a bonding picture for me and my son, as well as Goofy and Max.
As someone that has a 5-year-old son now that loves a Goofy movie, it's really cool too that your son was that age when you were making the film. Kevin, I'll go to you next. Do you have a fan interaction you wanted to mention or talk about?
I think really when I became aware that it was as popular as it is, I was at the El Capitan at one of their big screenings. They were doing the opening night screening of a little 5-day run, I think. And it was like the Rocky Horror Picture Show in that room. The fans were so into this movie. They knew every line of dialogue. They were singing along with the film. They came dressed up in character. In fact, someone wore a Lester's Possum Park walk-around suit. And I sat there in tears. People got up and danced in the aisles because I had an idea that it was gaining in popularity, but I had no idea it had gotten this. It had caught on in this kind of way.
Absolutely. It's so incredible just watching. I mean, knowing this around my friends, it's absolutely that kind of response when it comes to this film. Jason, how about you? Do you have any particular fan interactions you wanted to mention?
Oh, yeah, a bunch. And Kev, I can imagine how that must have felt.
It was overwhelming. Like
3 or 4, like probably 4 or 5 years of your time into this and seeing that reception, I would burst into tears as well, man. Like Bill kind of touched on it a little bit, how when I do go to conventions and people often say that that they solidified a relationship with their parent over this movie, I couldn't get along with my dad, but we bonded over this movie. Anything that was sort of tumultuous in their personal lives, this movie brought them together, and that was always so heartwarming. And I think my favorite fan interactions are when everyone comes up to me and talks like Goofy and says, "Oh, hey, how you doing there, Max?" And doing their best Billy for me.
That's incredible. So going right into your voice acting, we have two very prolific voice actors here with us today. So I wanted to know how you got your start in voice acting, and I'll go to Jason first, and then I'll go to Bill.
I Well, I was born in Rhode Island. I'm from the same state Kevin
Me
is.
Too.
Yeah. Rhode Islanders. Big little state, biggest little state in the union. Look at us now. We relocated to California, Fullerton, California, because my stepfather got a job teaching ballet at Fullerton College. And when we were there, it was like 1985, 86. I was 11. And people just suggested, oh, your son's cute. You should get him into acting. And my mom went, cha-ching, what a great idea. So they found a workshop for me in Irvine. They trained me for 12 weeks for everything. It was commercials, theatrical, movies, TV, voiceover. They sent me to an agent. The agent signed me that day, and the next day immediately started saturating me on things. And the first cartoon I booked a few months later was Disney's Adventures of the Gummy Bears. And just kind of went from there.
That's so great to be able to have that experience early and to be able to continue it throughout your career, because your credits are massive when you look at the amount of not only, and we'll have a question on video games later, but even getting into that space and the voice acting you've done there, it's just incredible. But Bill, how did you get involved in voice acting and how did that become your career?
Well, I grew up in a little town in South Central Kansas, and I was one of those kids who just gravitated toward cartoons on Saturday morning and just movies in general. I spent a lot of my time at our local theater. And I found when I was a teenager, I kind of had a little propensity for doing impressions. And my friends just thought, oh, that's cool, man. Let's drive through Burger King and get, you know, order in a weird voice. And I'd like a Whopper with cheese. And then they'd all laugh and everything, never thinking it would be a career. Long story short, I got my degree in journalism and kicked around in radio for a number of years as an engineer and an on-air personality, and then finally wound up in Dallas, where back in 1982, I took a chance and went up one night at a place called the Comedy Corner when comedy was just kind of hitting the big time, and it kind of took off. Within 6 months, I was traveling around as a stand-up comic, did that for about 5 years until an agent in Dallas said, you know, with all the voices you do, you ought to go out to Hollywood and give it a shot. I got an apartment out here, just kind of coming to Hollywood, was able to get an agent right away. And as luck would have it, one of the first auditions I did, and the first definitely major audition I ever did, was for Goofy. And they just said, do you do any of the Disney characters? They were kind of solidifying the voices behind these characters. At the time, they had four or five Mickeys, four or five Goofies and stuff, and they wanted the best one. And okay, and I got a cassette. Gosh, practiced the voice over the weekend and laid it down. Goofy being my favorite Disney character ever since I was a kid. And out of how many people tried out, they tried me. And the thing that most people don't know, they don't write it in stone that you're the voice. It's like, okay, this one time. And I'm saying, that was fun. Maybe they'll use me again. And now, 34 years later, they're still using me.
That's wonderful.
Now, can I interrupt for a second?
Yeah.
I just saw, this is an audio-only podcast.
Well, I think Brett usually likes to put it together as video as well.
Well, then you have to cut to Vanessa's face when Bill starts doing the voice. Because every time I do a convention with Bill, my favorite moment is when people walk by, because not everyone knows what voice actors look like, but they'll see this guy just hanging behind a table in one of your Hawaiian shirts, and they're like, they'll look down the picture of Goofy, they'll look up at Bill, and they'll look at that picture and look back at Bill, and they're like, are you Goofy? And he'll go, gosh, I sure am. And then they burst into confetti. They just bring so much joy to people. Just doing that voice. I love it.
Exactly. Absolutely. Brett's going to kill me for this. He has our next question, but I want to tell you both that Brett's got quite a spot on James Mason impression. So I don't know if he would bust that.
Oh, no. We were talking
but he has the next question for you.
Maybe later.
Okay. Brett, ask the question.
It's James Mason. Yeah. It's award season, even though in a year of unusual as this, you won an Annie Award in 2015 for your voice acting for Goofy and Grandma Goofy in one of the latest iterations of Mickey Mouse. Congratulations. What are the Annie Awards like? Okay, I need to do that like in a real voice. I'm sorry. Actually, I just got back from Walt Disney World and they wanted James Mason to ride Dumbo. So I did that for them. But anyway, the James Mason Foundation and all of this, it's meant in honor and not in anything else. But anyway, did you get the question or do I need to ask it again? So it's about the Annie Awards.
Yes. Yeah. Well, I was totally just blown away when I got that. I was at the back of the room and I wasn't even, up near the stage. I didn't expect it. And they called my name and it was just like shell shock. And I really don't even remember going up on stage and getting it. I was totally blown away for that. But I love the style of the new, Wonderful World of Mickey Mouse. I think it's a little different than the traditional Goofy. I think of them as almost two separate characters. It's almost like Retro Goof or, Mr. Geef or, Dippy Dog, really, is the way he's dressed, the way he originally came out in 1932. But we're able to do stuff on that series that we could not do on, say, Mickey Mouse Clubhouse. And we can take it in a whole different direction and stretching the character like we did in a Goofy movie with giving him a lot more emotion than he'd really ever had was a great thrill. And for any actor just loves to do that. You get to find out what's behind the noggin in these characters.
I love the new Mickey Mouse series because, in a way it's fun and it's kind of tongue in cheek and not really naughty at all, but it's just fun. And it's taken the place, because I watched a lot of it during my last vacation to Walt Disney World, that it sort of takes the place of kind of the Saturday morning cartoons that, used to be around. So it was kind of fun that way. So
real quick before your follow-up, Brett, I have to interject and say that my son loves them, but there was one that terrified him. It was the last one that they posted on Disney Plus, and it's called Just the Four of Us. And it was kind of like this creepy, like psychological thriller in a Mickey cartoon. And for a five-year-old, it was a little much. So it is kind of nice that you have that ability to go to a different place with those. But Brett, you had a follow-up.
Well, this is for Bill and Jason. The voice acting community sounds like a very fun and very exclusive acting group. Do you have any fun stories you can share?
Oh my gosh.
Or is it all a big secret?
Voice actors, I think, can hold their own with any on-camera actor. It's just a different style of acting, but it's all acting, and that's what people think. They think that it's about doing voices. No, it's acting. It's voice acting. It's not voice acting. The voice is important, but I always tell people that want to get into this, people tell me I got a great voice. And that's kind of like saying, I got a great guitar. I should be a guitarist. That's your instrument. It's what you can do with it that really matters.
Yeah, the voiceover community is bunch of crazy awesome people, and all the stories that pop in my head are probably not appropriate for this podcast.
Oh, that's okay. Well, thank you for I hope it brought up good memories. So
it's great memories. Something. It's great memories. Yeah.
Wow.
Vanessa, you had our next question.
Yes. So the film shows us a different side to Goofy, which you've mentioned before. And so I wanted to ask, we get to see him as a father and as a character with some flaws. So Kevin and Bill, any initial apprehension to make these changes to such an established character?
Yeah, well, I know Kevin can speak to this. And from my end, as an actor, you come in, you do the lines that go home. And when they were saying, okay, let's make Goofy a little bit more real and not as goofy. And how do I do that with still keeping the essence? But when you're producing a movie, you've got to deal with all of the upper echelon at Disney. And that's a whole story in itself, how this came to be. And Kevin, I know, has got stories on that.
Well, really, it all started from thinking about how do you tell a story with Goofy that can last 90 minutes, right? And I really felt like there had to be something emotional behind the whole thing in order to keep you engaged, that it just couldn't be, 75 minutes of pratfalls. So that's where that all began. And what Bill is alluding to is there was a point in production when one of our executives came to me and he was concerned about the goofiness of the voice. And he was concerned that it wasn't coming across in a way that audiences were going to attach, you know, connect to. And he suggested that we hire Steve Martin. And I just had a meltdown in the moment because I couldn't imagine. And on top of it, he wanted Steve Martin just to be Steve Martin. He didn't want Steve Martin to do the goofy voice. He just was thinking about Parenthood, I think, is what the movie that he was thinking about. And so I said, let me try something. And I went back to Bill and I tortured him. Probably, how many sessions did we do in this? Probably just one, right? Did we do one?
A couple of years, as I remember, you know.
But one it with your regular voice.
Yeah.
So we did the session where Bill just spoke the lines, and I could tell that he was just being torn up inside having to do this. And it was really for me, I had a secret agenda, which was I'm going to prove to them that this is not going to work, that this isn't the route to go. And we did it, and we cut a couple of sequences, and it just wasn't goofy. It just had nothing to do with goofy. It was, I mean, and Bill's wonderful acting aside, it was a guy. And I went back to Jeffrey and I said, we're not doing this. Oh, I said his name. Oh, no. I went back to the executive and I said, we're not doing this. This isn't goofy. And luckily he said, I get it. I agree. So I really put Bill through the ringer. Jason, were you there for those sessions? I can't remember.
I was. I remember Billy doing that, and I could feel the frustration. I remember he was doing a great job, but it like you said, it just wasn't goofy. We had to prove that you could still have this grounded character, and you can still have that voice. And
finding the right note was a little tough, and I was worried at that time. Says, don't people want to hear goofy if they're going to a goofy movie?
Yes. Exactly.
So the best. I'm just the hired help. I'll do the best I can. But I'm so glad when we came around and redid it all in Goofy's voice and were able to add the emotions. And so that little sidetrack that we went on probably helped solidify the acting on that. So it all turned out.
It did, Bill. I think it really gave us a sense of really how the barometer of how emotional maybe we could be, that we could probably push it further than we were.
Yeah,
I think that helped you as an exercise to bring some of that, the real,
it was.
The realness of the emotion into the character.
People always ask me my favorite scene from the movie, and I always say, and I'm like, it sounds weird, but my favorite scene is Goofy and Pete in the hot tub, hanging out as dads, just talking about dad problems. And Billy's performance in that is just so, it's just so grounded, but it still has the goofy voice with a grounded performance. And
it's complex, right? There are multiple things going on in that scene at the same time. And you're not really used to seeing that in animation.
Right. Yeah. It was kind of a ringer to go through, but those are the kind of the hard times is what you remember. And the proof is in the pudding when it came out. And when I went to a screening, I don't know if I've ever told you this, Kevin, that we were on the lot. And like Eisner was here and Katzenberg was here, and we were watching kind of a pencil test of it. And I was sweating. I hope they like this thing. And when we left, my son, who was with me, he was about 5 at the time, was crying a little bit. And I said, what's the matter? Didn't you like the movie? And I said, when Goofy went over the waterfall, I thought that was you. I knew it had heart and struck that chord that it was supposed to strike at the right time. And I said, this is going to be okay.
Yeah,
absolutely. And you're right, Jason, the hot tub scene, just I tear up and I feel everything I'm supposed to feel in that scene when I'm watching it. But I want to ask about some of the other voice actors and characters in the film. So there are a lot. And so I wanted to ask, could you name one of your favorites, either working with others in the film after seeing, or maybe even just seeing them after the finished product? And I'll remind you, if you can't think of any other actors off the top of your head, that Kevin was in the movie as another character. So if you want to you know, mention Kevin.
You didn't ask me when I started my my voiceover career.
Right. Was it in this film that you
It would have been with a Goofy movie, yes. Absolutely.
Give us the line, Kev.
Yeah.
Who's your favorite possum?
I love it. Can we go to, Jason, do you mind starting that off with that answer of, you know, is there other supporting characters you wanted to mention that you just really enjoyed in this film?
Yeah, absolutely. I loved Bobby, the Leaning Tower of Chisa, baby. I was a big Pauly Shore fan, and I got to work with him. He was in the studio with us, so that was a treat. And then, of course, you know, Rob Paulsen is PJ, who I think that was his first feature, I think he said.
Really?
Yeah, he came in and we were all kind of astounded. And Jimmy as Pete, who I didn't work with a whole bunch at the time, but it was just a treat to share space with them. And you know, I work with these guys, but I'm also like I'm fangirling at the same time.
Yeah.
Cause they're so amazing. But Pauly Shore,
definitely
was stands out for sure.
And Bill? I was in the waiting to go in for a while, and I happened to be there the same day Pat Buttram was in to do his line or a couple of lines, as you know, in the Possum Park, saying "Here it is," you know. And he was so great. He died about 6 months later, I believe, but he was on. He was telling jokes and keeping me entertained, gave me his home phone number. Let's get together and go to lunch and everything. And unfortunately, that never happened. But he was great telling jokes and just, and I was always a big Green Acres fan. And I loved his stuff even back as Gene Autry, because, you know, I liked that old stuff when I was growing up. And sitting talking with him was a big memory from that time.
And Kevin?
Well, I was going to say Pat also, because it's the same thing. It was like having like the star of your favorite animated films there with you. I mean, from Robin Hood and the Aristocats, I was just thrilled to have Pat in the room. I think one of the favorite times I had was when I got Jason and Kelly Martin in the room together, because we got to explore a different relationship. Spent a lot of time with Bill and Jason together, and it was rare to get your actors together in the room, and we got to do it a lot, luckily. I think Jason and Bill, you guys did most of your sessions together, if I remember. Yeah, and so to get two younger actors and feel that different kind of energy happen was really exciting for me.
That's great. Now, Jason, this is a question specifically for you. I told my wife about this, of course, and she would be so upset if I didn't ask about this, because she said, you have Thackeray Binks coming on your podcast. So not only are you involved in the cult classic that is A Goofy Movie, you're also in the Halloween movie now. Any Hocus Pocus stories you wanted to share, or did you take anything surprising away from that film or that role in particular? And only in jest, but are you free for an interview you in October, you know? So.
Well, first let me say hello to your wife and let her know that she can turn me into a fat, useless, contented house cat anytime. But I have to have October's off so I can, you know, defend the virgins from witches. Yeah, talk about a movie that you know, was released summer of 95, I think, in July, a Halloween movie, and just kind of came and went. And now you can't escape it every October. Well, if you've seen the movie, you see the guy in the beginning, the human character played by Sean Murray, is not me. It's Sean. So it's my voice coming out of his mouth and the cat. They hired him at first to be the human character and the cat. And then, you know, movies happen. They finish filming, and in the post-production, you know, changes are made, and to my benefit, they hired me to come in and do the voice. I think Sean was using his own voice, and later on they thought, you know, Vinx is about, he's a 300-year-old cat from colonial Salem, he should have an old world sort of sound. I don't know. I would love to talk with Sean about this. I don't know if he attempted it or it didn't work or whatever, but they did a casting and I booked it. I had no idea I was replacing anybody. What was funny is I was working on a show called Boy Meets World on the Disney lot next door to where they were shooting Hocus Pocus. This is before I even booked it. So I would go on the set and I'd hang out because I knew Omri Katz from a show we did together when we were 17. I knew Vanessa Shaw from, we had mutual friends. So I'd be on the set hanging out. And then, you know, several months later, I'd be actually working on it, but I didn't get to work with anybody. Mm-hmm. It was all sort of after the fact, but yeah, it blows the mind.
Yeah. It's just incredible. It's very, for our generation, it is like, there are no bigger Disney movies in my mind than things like a Goofy movie, things like Hocus Pocus, Mighty Ducks that came out about that time. I mean, those early 90s, mid 90s movies just mean so much to us. And then now we're giving those to our children and saying, like, you need to like this, trying not to do that. But Vanessa, you had our next question for Kevin.
Yes. Okay. Kevin, we have to talk about Tarzan. So just for background for everybody else, I was on TikTok. I started noticing these videos of the Generation Zers they're sharing videos of them. So it's basically like Kevin as a director telling Phil Collins that the music for Tarzan is too good. You got to slow it down. This is too much for this movie. Then I go on Twitter and Tarzan and Phil Collins are trending on Twitter. And so I tweeted over to Kevin. I'm like, Kevin, did you know about this? And so we have to know, for all the TikTokers out there, what really happened? How did it go down? Did you tell Phil, this is too much? You're going to have to scale it back. Is that what happened?
No, absolutely not. In fact, Phil thought he had to scale it back. And we said, no, we don't want you to write, you know, Disney I Want songs. We want to do this. This is a different kind of musical. And so we just let Phil cut loose and do what he does. And him being a drummer, first and foremost, sort of laid the language for the movie. And just let him go.
Yeah. And how did
you know Jason is also in Tarzan?
He's an ape.
He's an ape.
Yeah, I saw that. It's all in the family here. So how do you guys... No,
hey, let's not talk about this. Bill's going to get jealous.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry about that. But are you surprised by all these like young people that are like, go check out Tarzan. It's amazing. I mean, it's kind of like having the Goofy movie effect now, right?
I think we relate to the movies that we saw when we were kids, right? They mean so much to us that we bring them back into our lives over and over and over again. I mean, I talk about movies from my childhood that I adored growing up and made me who I was. So I can imagine that there's a generation after generation feeling the same way about the movies that we've all made.
For sure. For sure.
Brett, you have our question for Bill.
Well, so Bill, you were included in the first D23 Expo Disney Legends ceremony. I mean, you received your reward with so many other Disney legends. I mean, Disney Imagineers and all of the Golden Girls and Robin Williams. Wow. I mean, what can you tell us a little bit about that experience with the first D23 Expo in 2009 and becoming a Disney legend?
Yeah, well, first of all, it was totally a surprise to me. I just got a letter from Bob Iger. You are now, you know, been selected to be a Disney legend. I didn't really have a good handle. I knew of the Disney Legends Plaza over the studios, but I didn't know really what it was. And I didn't know the people that I would be sharing the stage with. I mean, meeting Robin Williams and Betty White as well, and all of the other Golden Girls posthumously, as well as some non-voice actors, Tony Anselmo, who does the voice of Donald Duck, also got a Disney Legend Award. And it was the first one in front of the public, 4,500 people down in Anaheim. And it was surreal. I got to put my hands in the cement on stage, and that my handprints are now on the wall over at the Disney studio in the Legends Plaza. And I take great pride in that because I never won anything in high school. So no medals or nothing, no ribbon, no baseball, you know, nothing. So I was very pleased that they chose me for that. And I honor that a great deal. But it was, again, it's kind of a surreal thing. I got an award for doing what I love to do. And that's the best part is, you know, I'm at retirement age now and people always say, when are you going to retire? Why ever retire from this? Yeah. It is the most fun, creative, wonderful job. You get to work with wonderful people. It's difficult. I mean, it's very difficult to get the jobs. 99% of this is auditioning, but that magical 1% is where, you know, that's where the Disney magic is. And it's just, it's like, you know, I'm getting to ride along with Goofy. I always say Goofy's famous. I'm not, but I get to go along with him. So it's,
very thankful for that. So
just incredible. And it's cool to hear your story about how you were notified of that. We had a chance to talk to Jodie Benson last year, and she mentioned she thought she was getting fired when she got her Disney Legend Award. So she thought that was the call she was getting. But but getting back to a Goofy movie, there are, and Jason mentioned this with the hot tub scene. So you don't necessarily have to go again, Jason, if that is your answer to this question. But there are scenes in this film you don't expect to exist in a movie about Goofy and his son. Are there particular scenes that you've kind of found yourself years later revisiting, whether that be because of a lived experience that you had while you were recording or directing, or is there something that maybe just touches you in a different way about this film? And I'll go to Kevin first.
I tend to like the scenes that live outside of the norm of what you expect. There's a scene that almost got cut out of the movie that when we did test screenings, parents were saying, oh, I do not like this scene where Max and Goofy argue in the car after the possum park. Max is so mean to his dad. And I was getting a lot of pressure to cut it out. And I really felt like it really sat at the crux of what was going on in the movie, all the pent up frustrations just pouring out. And without it, I didn't think I would be able to motivate what was coming after it. So I really had to fight hard for that scene. And I'm really, really proud of it in the film. It's not the type of scene you typically see, especially with the classic characters.
Yeah, you know why parents are so upset, Kev? Because like they weren't allowed to talk to their parents like that. They get smacked.
Kind of true, isn't it? It's kind of true.
Bill, do you have a particular scene that you revisit?
Oh, actually, my favorite scene is the Lester's Possum Park sequence. And when Goofy gets hurt by Max, and the misunderstandings of where each of them at, and then they come together, you know, when they're on the top of the car floating down the river. There's just enough Goofy in it. There's enough, you know, realism where they're arguing, and yet they're patching things up by learning where everybody else lives, you know, and coming together. Those two scenes kind of complement each other and bookend the emotional part, which I like probably the most. And also the singing. I love doing the singing. Those are some really joyful, fun songs, and also sentimental songs, Nobody Else But You. And The Open Road is just a fun travel buddy kind of song. And I just love those.
Yeah. Jason, did you have another one that you wanted to mention? I know you talked about the hot tub scene earlier.
I found since Kevin and I did a podcast interview last year, and this is something I never even realized. But the couple from that they're featured in The Open Road, the little tiny man, the giant woman, did not realize that was her in the Powerline concert at the end, and all went completely full circle. So I love finding these other little bits, little eggs that he's dropped there. But the finale, you know, because I love music, I love concerts, the way it was animated and choreographed and put together is always a standout thing for me in that movie.
I like it. You know, Eye to Eye, holy moly, what a song. Yeah. What a song. Vanessa, you had our next question.
Yeah. So since we're talking about music, I think I will ask a question about the songs in a Goofy movie. So the beginning feels like Grease to me. And then we've got this, like you said, great road trip adventure with On the Open Road. So when you signed on for this project, did you know you were going to have to sing? And what was that experience like? And I think, Jason, you might even have some stories about not singing as well. So tell me about that experience.
Well, after I had found out I booked the role of Max, they said, okay, we're going to bring you in, go to audition to sing. You still, no matter what, you'll be Max, but we want to see if you can sing. And I worked hard at it. I did my best. And someone did not think it was good enough. I have no ill will, maybe a little like ego problem. But my friend Aaron Lore, who I've known for years, it does all of Max's singing. And it was funny because I ran into him at like a commercial audition, and I'm like, "Hey, Aaron, what's going on? What are you doing?" He's like, "Oh, I just booked this movie. I'm singing for this kid who can't sing." And I'm like, I'm just looking at him like, "Oh, okay." And then he called me later when he found out. He's like, "Why didn't you say anything? I'm so sorry." With or without me, the songs are amazing. Aaron did a great job, and I sing along in the car when I'm listening to the soundtrack. So there.
You know, I have to interject. I think it was like the 20th anniversary of the film. You did a panel at D23, and the two of you sang it together, "Open Road," and you crushed it. So I'm just letting you know.
Yeah. It happens to the best of people. So it's
totally
good.
Understandable.
It doesn't take away
tell people
from your
like,
performance.
Like
at
I know,
all.
Matthew Broderick is a singer, and he sings very well. He did not do his own singing for Lion King. It's these decisions that get made. And that's what happened.
I wish I could give you some comfort, Jason, but honestly, we're sitting here talking about this and I can't remember.
Yeah.
I truly cannot remember where it happened. I don't even remember hearing you sing, to be quite honest with you. So.
And as I remember, I think that was the first thing we did recording in the movie were the songs. So I don't even know if I had met you yet. Before I did the songs, I'm trying to, it's been a long time, but the songs weren't that, I love the songs. They weren't that difficult and I wasn't too scared because a lot of people through Disney, I've probably done 25 albums over the years. And so I'm used to the character singing. And the nice thing is the caveat is that you don't think of Goofy as being a great singer. So I don't have a lot of pressure on me, you know, it's, so I didn't feel like I just have to sound like Goofy singing. So that wasn't too difficult, but I love the songs and I love the way they came out and fit in the movie and move it along. That was a lot of fun to do.
Yeah, absolutely. Brett, you had a question for Bill.
Well, as you can tell, Bill, I'm a big fan because I'm getting all these great questions. So thank you. Anyway, it's an honor to speak to you. Okay, there. So Bill, you've played a character that I'm guessing actually could be a relative of mine. In Cars, it was William Bradford Rutherford, which I guess was a reporter, maybe. Anyway, so you've been a voice actor in so many films and you are living my dream, but how do you find just the right, what is your process to finding just the right voice for so many different characters or following in the footsteps of iconic animated characters that everyone knows so well and loves?
Some voices are just easier than others to impersonate, especially if you're stepping into a character like Goofy. And as I said earlier, Goofy was my favorite Disney character growing up. So I was one of those kids around the house where, "Gorge, Mom, how you doing?" So I already had the laugh down just from playing with it in the car and just playing with voices. It's also fun when you come up with a new character. I do a television series for Disney called Amphibia, where I play a character named Hop Pop. And that I just got a picture for the audition of the character, which is very typical, and the lines, and you just kind of saying, okay, what would a elderly frog sound like? And I just kind of decided to give him a kind of a Texas accent
and maybe he's a little bit kind of, stuck in his ways and, you know, that kind of thing. And I was like, for that one, I had the template of, I was thinking, oh, that sounds kind of like Ross Perot. Okay. I'll make some kind of like Ross Perot. And it kind of came out like that. And so we've done three seasons on that. And, you know, sometimes just the voice comes to you. And a lot of them are takeoffs on bad impressions I do. And others are just kind of what hits you is usually the best gut feeling thing that I can say is how it comes up. And you work with your throat and the tone. Like, if you're doing a deep voice, you can kind of put the tone down here, but you could put an English accent on that or a Western accent or whatever. You got two different characters. You could do kind of a big nasal character like this and make him a New Yorker. You could make him a Texas guy, or you could make him an English person with the articulation of the tongue. So it's basically the throat and the tongue and, you know, then what's he like in the, personality, and then you have to define that, and there you got it.
Wow, a masterclass! Thank you. So it was great. Thank you. I apologize for my James Mason. I'll work on it.
Kevin, we spoke about how A Goofy Movie was your first film to direct, and you've gone on to direct so many stellar films. What lessons, if any, did you get from your voice actors that you then took forward from A Goofy Movie into your other films?
You know, I don't know if, and you guys can tell me if I started this way, but when I was doing Tarzan, Glenn Close said, hey, you direct much more like a live action director than you do like an animation director. And what she meant about that is I never asked people, could you do it three times, each time doing it faster? I would talk about what was happening in the scene, what the motivations were, what scenes that came before, try to help the actors prepare for the moment that they were going to embark on. And I think this was the first time I was able really to put I was a puppeteer as a teenager into college. So I got to, and I was, you know, I built and directed and performed. And I think this was the first time I got to take all of that and bring it into what I did for a living. This was my first directorial, film, as you guys said. So I think that's what I did. I tried to speak to the actors as actors and not as Bill was saying, as voice talent. I tried to sort of ground everything, find the grounding for the scenes we were about to do.
And do you have any specific stories or anything that in your working with Bill and Jason in particular that you, not to put you on the hot seat, but are there anything that you had gleaned from that experience?
Tell them how we prepared you for Glenn Close.
You'll also learn this about these guys is that they can really give it to you. I don't know if there's anything, if I can remember anything specific. I remember because these guys were both in the room together most of the time that we talked about scenes. We talked about what was happening in the scene and what were the subtexts that were going on in the scenes. And I think, you know, if anything, that's what it gave me. That's what I brought forward, is that you talk about the work, not necessarily the line. Mm-hmm. You talk about, I remember saying to Glenn Close one time that I just felt like the mood of the scene was more blue, because I knew that we were going to bathe the scene in blue light. And she went, okay, I got it. And went off. And that's really, it really came from gaining some confidence. I was also my first time with these guys, so I was as nervous as could be, to be quite honest with you, to begin with. I was really sweating. And I also had to fight, because typically in TV animation, this Goofy Movie was made in TV, there's a voice director. And I wanted to direct the voices. So I had to step in and fight for my place, you know, in the group. Mm-hmm. Because typically they don't even want you there in the room. They want to just deliver the lines to you and then you do with them as you please. That's how it typically happens in TV. But I wanted to be in the room with these guys because I knew I had something to add.
Yeah, absolutely. That's amazing. Jason, I wanted to ask you a question because, again, looking through your credits, not only have you done so much in television and film, but you have really done a lot of great work in video games as well. And from an outsider's perspective, it almost seems like you get to kind of live in those characters a little bit more because it almost seems like you're able to create more, I guess, in video. Am I right in that? Is there something that you prefer doing? Do you prefer doing television and film versus video games, or is it just kind of all the same? What's your experience been like in that realm?
Well, I just like acting, man. I mean, I like performing in any medium. Video games are fun. I play video games. I would say they're probably like the hardest gig to do. They're so technical and can be very strenuous because, you know, a lot of video games require combat and screaming and dying and stuff like that. I prefer stability. So yeah, I prefer to just keep acting.
That's good.
Vanessa?
So my question is for Bill. So there's something really familiar about you. And you remind me of some of my favorite family members, honestly. So I was wondering, maybe it's because you're from the Midwest. You know, me and my co-hosts, we're from the Midwest. We've heard of Midwest Nice. So do you have any thoughts on being from the Midwest and working in the entertainment industry and how it influences your portrayal of Goofy?
Yeah, I guess his personality, which you have to define before you're really going to do a good job with a character, is he's an optimist. He's a kind soul. Nature seems to be against him in a lot of ways. And so when I do something stupid, I blame it on Goofy. But he's just it's kind of funny. If you know the other voice actors, if you knew Wayne Allwine and Russie Taylor, they were the embodiment of Mickey and Minnie. They just were. I just typecasting, even though the voice wasn't. Personality wise, they were. Tony is like Donald. He can be, you know, he can, you know, he's got a temper and he can be like that. And it just, we live these characters. And so there's definitely a lot that you have to put into your character, and your emotions become that character's emotion. And maybe it's not that much of a jump to me and Goofy, but I feel very akin to him. And it wasn't a hard stretch. It's nuanced. It's not, I never thought of him as like dumb or simple. He may be simple, but more importantly, he's a good soul. And that's kind of the tag that I put on him. And he tries to be helpful. And I always got that when I was growing up in Kansas, is that Midwestern kind of nice. And, okay, always be polite. Never say anything that you wouldn't want everyone to hear. And all of those kind of little things come into it. So maybe growing up in Kansas had a little, helped me a little bit in doing something with the character.
I think that's maybe why you feel so bad for Goofy in a Goofy movie, because he is a good guy. He really is a nice guy, and some things really happen to him that shouldn't happen to anyone, really, both physically and emotionally.
Yeah, so. He can be hurt, which we really never had to do before. That was what was so fun, and finding those little notes is he can be hurt. He can be disappointed, but he still loves, and that came through big time in a Goofy movie, and that's kind of what I kind of wanted to get across with my acting. And then getting to know Jason, and I've known him socially for, you know, these past 25 years too. So it's not like just working buddies and there you go. It's almost like he became my second son. My son, who was 5 at the time, was, I think, totally messed up by the movie, because people would say, oh, is Max your brother? Is Goofy your dad? And I didn't think I had a brother. I think it still messed him up.
It's remarkable because, you know, there's so many moments in the movie where you're like, Max, you're going to come to appreciate your dad so much in a couple of years. You know, you got to get out of your own way, especially just easy things like the scene at the beginning when Goofy's trying to clean up your room and all of that. You know, so I totally get all of that. And it's perfectly encapsulated, that relationship of high school boy and dad in this movie, for sure.
Brett, on both sides, even, right? So you can you can understand it from both sides. So you can enjoy it when you're a kid, and you can enjoy it when you're a parent or an adult.
I had someone comment to me that when they were a kid, they're like, "Man, you know what's wrong with Goofy? They should Max just wanted to go to a concert." And then he got older and had kids of his own, and he watched the movie again. He's like, "Man, what's wrong with Max? Goofy just wanted to take his son fishing."
Perfect. Right?
Yeah.
Well, we've talked about Midwest Nice and all of that means, but we have to also talk about Rhode Island Nice, since, as you said, you're both from Rhode Island, or any East Coast charms or traits that have served you well on the out on the West Coast?
Is there Rhode Island Nice, Kev?
Yeah, I know. I'm like,
there is. I don't know if there is.
Rhode Island. That's why I said traits. Are there any traits from the East Coast that that have served you well in your careers?
I don't know if they're necessarily Rhode Island traits, but as a kid growing up, I learned, and this is something you guys were talking about earlier, is I learned that in order to get the things that I want in life, I have to ask for them. And I definitely learned that growing up in Rhode Island. I'm not sure that everybody in Rhode Island asks for what they want, but it certainly was a part of my upbringing in defined who I was.
I feel more Rhode Islanders is more like, instead of ask what you want, they kind of tell you what they want.
Hey, that works.
Yeah.
I haven't met that many people from Rhode Island, though, other than you two. And you two seem perfectly nice. So I don't know what you're talking about.
Oh, I'm not kidding. No, everyone in Rhode Island's nice, but they're ball busters. You know, they're much like, there's a lot of Italian East Coast personalities.
A lot of money, a lot of mafia.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Going on.
Definitely.
Let me tell you what you're going to do.
Exactly. The traits that I absorb from Rhode Island is my affinity for seafood.
Yes. Hey, that works too.
That's great. Vanessa?
So another question for Bill. We also got to hear you in the parks, as we mentioned earlier, on Mickey and Minnie's Runaway Railway. So tell us about that process. Do they give you a clue into the storyline of the ride? Do they let you ride it? What happens when you're asked to do the voice for an attraction?
I did the voice on that, which is based on the Wonderful World of Mickey Mouse style, the Mickey Shorts style of Mickey and their world. We recorded probably a year and a half before the ride was even really built. So no, I didn't get to go on the ride until after we did all of our work, about a year after our work. But I knew the character. In fact, it's kind of underwhelming to watch a voiceover session. You get a page of dialogue and a microphone in a room. That is typically what you get. And you have to create that world in your mind with the director. And, even like Mickey and Donald and everything, they aren't in the room with you. So you have to use your imagination. How far are they away from you? It would affect the way you say stuff. And you have to build this little scene in your head, an act to what's in your head. And then the director will correct you and say, no, Mickey's closer or farther away. And you take those hints and is like this, and then you do it again. And then eventually they go, yeah, that one. And then you move on. But it was not unlike any other voice acting session. It was a booth with some paper, a microphone, and a music. Okay. And that was
your first. Was that your first time doing an attraction, Billy?
Oh, no. I do the Seven Dwarves. I'm Sleepy. I was also Doc in the 7D reunion of that. So in the Runaway There thing, I actually got to do Pat Buttram a long time ago at announcements at the park. They did a thing called State Fair. And so I was doing all of the announcements for the park as Pat. And of course, in Toontown, Mickey and Goofy's got several rides. And so, yeah, I've been in a lot of attractions down there, but mostly as Goofy.
Cool. And Jason, you came back for the Hocus Pocus show. Is that correct?
I did. Yeah. That was just a buddy of mine who's an Imagineer over there, knew the people who were working on that. He's like, hey, my friend is this Thackeray. Would you want to include him somehow? And yeah, they arranged the session. It's funny. They told me I couldn't say good evening, Thackeray Binks here. Get ready for the villain show. Couldn't reference Thackeray Binks for some reason. This is like this weird, it's not, it is show business, kids. It's they didn't have the rights to that character. They had the rights to the, just the witches. That was it. But I just did it. I did it as the voice. And you know, if you're a fan of the movie, you know who it is, but that's I'm not in any rides, but I have done Max for parades and then the Hocus Pocus, show. So it's as a fan of the parks, it's a thrill to be to hear me in the parks as well.
Yeah. And then Kevin, you know, you have so many characters that whether from established properties that now exist in those parks because of works that you've done, or, I mean, to kind of talk about your wife and creating a Disney princess, the first Pixar Disney princess, really. What kind of experience is that like to see those characters in the park?
Oh, it's, you know, it's a dream come true, to be quite honest with you. You know, when I was a kid, I wanted to go to Disney World so badly and didn't get to go till I was like, I graduated from high school. And then to be on the other side of it and creating characters that then end up in the park is an incredible thrill.
Excellent. Excellent. Brett, I think you have one of our final questions.
Well, we've had such a great opportunities to speak with creative people during this last year. And we've found them really continuing to make art during this pandemic. Kevin, we spoke to you what it seems like at the beginning of all of this. Have you continued to work on projects throughout? And then if I may ask that question to the both of you, and you must have studios in your homes or something. Have you been able to work? Has this been a productive time during a very hard time?
Well, you know, absolutely. I don't know how to stop. You know, I just keep going and going. We just set up another movie, which is great. So we're in development on our fourth movie now with the company that Brenda and I started together, Twas Entertainment. And I just keep going. I just keep going. I'm that Energizer Bunny that's not going to stop until the batteries run out.
That's wonderful.
I'm actually, you can probably see over my shoulder, a microphone. I'm in my studio at home and I've done all my series work and everything else from right here since COVID started. I was very fortunate. There's a show on Disney Plus called It's a Dog's Life with Bill Farmer that I executive produced, and I'm on camera live action. We did our last episode of that first season in Hawaii in February of 2020. So just before the shutdown. But since then, haven't missed a beat. Just do it. My son is an audio engineer. He runs the sessions. I sit back behind the microphone there, and we've been able to do via Zoom everything that I would have done in a studio.
Wonderful. Great. And Jason?
Yeah, I highly recommend It's a Dog's Life. We loved it. Loved it. Nothing better than Bill Farmer hanging out with a bunch of cute doggies. Turning my closet into a recording studio. I mentioned earlier, I live in Nashville, Tennessee, and I was, even though it's voiceover, I was still expected to commute to Los Angeles for work, which was problematic and tiresome. But now it's not the case. So I did do a couple of gigs in my closet. And I am surrounded by like amazing musicians and comedians. And I've had this love for classic variety shows like Dean Martin's show and The Muppet Show. So I put together my own variety show on YouTube called The Mars Variety Show. I would love for everyone to check it out. Please hit the subscribe button. You know how that works.
Doing that right now for sure. We can't begin to thank you all enough. You know, this has been, a surreal year for us that started with an interview with Kevin and is kind of, as we celebrate our 100th episode here, getting to celebrate that with the three of you is just absolutely blowing us all away. When this came, through, my wife said I couldn't stop smiling for a couple of days. And I'm so excited to have had this conversation. And I think Kevin mentioned that this might be one of the first times that the three of you individually had gotten a chance to talk about this. So I just thought I might say, any final thoughts on the legacy of A Goofy Movie, your experiences, anything you want to say about A Goofy Movie? And we'll go in the order we introduced you in. So we'll go Jason first.
You know, Kev, I don't know if you were for me or against me, but thanks for having me in the movie. It was a great experience. I was a Disney fan growing up, and to be part of something that's literally part of Disney, you know, history, you know, to be Goofy's son and to solidify a friendship with Bill Farmer, who's outstanding. And not to mention, you know, the connectivity this movie has had with so many people like yourselves. I am forever grateful, and I love all the Goofy Movie fans, and thank you guys so much for liking it so much and wanting us to keep talking about it.
Sure. Absolutely. Bill?
Well, I think it's definitely one of the most important jobs as Goofy that I've ever done, according to the fans, because I still, like I say, get asked about it all the time, unlike any of the other shows I've done over the years. I'm deeply appreciated for the chance to do it. I'm totally overwhelmed with the love that people have for this movie after this many years. It just gets more and more. When we did the panel a couple of years ago, that I felt like the Beatles coming on stage. I mean, people were just going nuts, and it was standing room only. It was the love that people have for this just really is genuinely gratifying. And to get to work with Kevin and Jason, get to know everybody, it was just a delight. I'd love to do it again sometime.
Yeah. Kevin, any final thoughts?
Well, first I have to say, Jason, I cast you. Okay, let's get that out of the way. For me, it was about the surprise of it all, because I came into A Goofy Movie thinking, okay, I'm going to make a movie about Goofy. We'll see where this goes. It wasn't like my dream to make a movie about Goofy, but I found a way into the material that was meaningful for me. It spoke to the way that I grew up. I didn't have a dad around at all, so I got to speak to that, which was really a thrill to be able to bring something of myself. And then to have it sort of blossom into this thing that just lives on and on and on. Of all the movies I've directed, this is the one that gets brought up most often and most people want to talk about. And that's an incredible surprise for me. And it also made me aware that you have to be really careful about what you put out in the world, because you never know how it's going to affect people. And, you know, this movie that I thought was just a stepping stone has become this, you know, this huge part of people's lives. And that's a wonderful thing to be able to carry around with you.
Yeah, just absolutely incredible. Thank you all so much. Thank you to Jason Marsden, Bill Farmer, Kevin Lima. This has just been an incredible hour with all of you. And we are so grateful for your time and grateful for your continued entertainment and everything that you're doing. It really, as fans, we cannot thank you enough for all that you've done. It's just incredible.
Oh, shucks. Thank you, guys. Appreciate you.
Thank you. You're welcome, guys.
Thank you very much.
It's so nice to see you all.
You may stay as long as you'd like. We'll, you know, we'll have something catered. We'll have something ready.
I come out of these things. I'm the one that has to come out of this and have some kind of like, wow, that was exciting. And oh my goodness, how amazing this was. But truly I'm speechless having just listen to that and that discussion that they were able to have with one another. I don't think that they had seen each other for a while, so it was kind of like a family reunion of sorts that we were able to witness as well. And just so gracious with their time, so humble with the work that they've done and the impression that has left on us, not only as children, but also as adults, and just outrageously fun and exciting opportunity that we had. And thank you so much to Bill and Jason, but especially to Kevin, because he was the one that helped us kind of coordinate all this. And just thank you so much. We can't say that enough. But your thoughts on the interview first, and then we might reflect a bit on our 100 episodes. And I'll go to Brett first. Your thoughts on the interview.
You know, there are no words. There are no words. It was so exciting, and they were all so kind. And we found out some new things, and we found out so many interesting things about the movie and about their careers, that it's something I'm very happy that we had the opportunity to share with our audience, and also, you know, to go to have that experience ourselves. Oh my gosh, the people we've talked to. So exciting.
Yeah.
So exciting.
Vanessa, your thoughts?
Do I have any even? I mean, that was just incredible. It was, I don't know what else to say. I can't believe we're having these opportunities to talk to such amazing people. You know, I know this sounds like a very small town thing to say, but these people in Hollywood are so nice. I mean, whenever you hear about Hollywood, it's got to be like all the negative things you might hear as has to be like just the smallest percentage of people who are actually from there, because the people we have met who've worked in this industry are talented, they're thoughtful, they're insightful, and they're so kind and giving of their time. I've just had the best time today talking to all three of them. They're gems. They're just wonderful.
You know, I can't agree with either of you more, and just thank you so much for their time. And I do want to start to reflect on what we have accomplished here as a team. And this is truly a team effort. And whether it's Vanessa coming up with amazing articles and questions for us to ask, whether it's me reaching out to people to book guests, or it's Brett spending hours and hours of editing, this really is a team effort. And I have to tell you, you know, again, not to get too emotional with you, but this last year has been so tough for so many people, and it has been difficult for myself. You know, I have super anxiety about things. And so when the world started to shut down last year, it was so refreshing and so necessary to have the two of you to be able to come and talk to, and to be able to talk about something that I love and be able to communicate that with you. And I often listen to podcasts almost as my own form of therapy. And so being able to do that, being able to do this show with you, has meant so much to me, not only for the last year, but especially the last year. And the people that we've gotten to talk to along the way, you know, we've spoken to so many incredible people. We've had the opportunities to speak to them, but truly at the heart of it, this show exists only because the two of you are willing to go along on this ride and willing to be such a huge part of the effort that we put into all of this. And I can't begin to thank you enough, because it truly is something that has touched me in a way I'll never forget. This show, I don't know, you know, here's to another 100 episodes. Things happen in life. We never know what's going to happen, but it's nice to reflect on the time that we've had so far. And just again, I can't put into words how much it means to me. So I'll make you guys put them into words. So I'll go to Vanessa first. Any reflections or thoughts on our 100th episode?
Wow. It's been some time since we started doing these episodes. Well, first of all, I have to thank Brett, who helped me join in this by asking if I could tag along with him. I am forever in your debt for that. So, but thank you. And then Craig, of course, we just think you're phenomenal at everything you do. We probably tease you more than we should, but it's only because we love you so much. You both are just like brothers to me, my brothers from other mothers. And to the listeners too, we haven't really had a chance to really get to meet you, whoever you are, but we're so thankful to you for listening. And, you know, like Craig said, this year, oof, it's been a doozy, but it was really helpful to be able to know that I could get to talk to people, and not just people, but these two guys almost once a week. Sometimes it feels like about 100 times a week with our recording schedule. But to get to talk to you once a week and just have a break from the world and to talk about Disney and all things Disney, our favorite things, and to talk to amazing people. I mean, that I can't say it enough that the people we have had on here, when we talk about their work, it's wonderful. But when we just talk about life with them, human to human, it's amazing. And I hope you listening feels that as well. So thank you to everyone who listens. Thank you to you guys. You're the best.
Brett, your reflections or thoughts here?
Let's see. Are you making me do cleanup? Here, another sports reference. Thank you.
Hey, you're so good now. You're so good.
I'm getting so good. Yeah, well, okay. it is hard to put into words. But I'll just say thank you to both of you. I mean, I call it, you know, there is another major company that talks about having a special sauce. But I think we have a special sauce together, and I'm very, very thankful for that. And, you know, and we kid each other in the way that, yeah, as I've said before, I don't have siblings. So you have kind of, you know, given me that joy and pain and all of the things that siblings will do. So it's fun. But when I think, you know, first of all, I guess, you know, when I think about the guests that we've spoken to, and again, thank you, Kevin, for kind of giving us the little, I guess, push, or, you know, whatever it was. It was a gentle shove. It was, here you go, ask. And I just cannot believe the people that we've spoken to this year. And again, just hanging out with you and hanging out with other friends and other members of the network. It's just been, you know, for again, as you said, a very, very difficult year. We've barely had time to think of the other things in the world because we've been so busy with this. And it's sort of because of the situation, the current situation, as I say, that we've had the opportunity to speak with people who may have been busy doing other things had we not had the situation. So I hope that we've been a little bit of a relief or a release for them as well. And again, our listeners, oh my gosh, when I met one of our listeners in a grocery store, if you're listening, I'm still living that moment, you know, who said that we bring a little happiness to him each week. I'm like going, that was really one of those moments that you kind of go, wow. And I'm just very thankful for. So thankful for the big old package that is Beyond the Mouse and the people that we've talked to, and especially you two. I'm going to cry now.
I know this love fest that's going on. I'll tell you, we, to kind of wrap up what both of you said, we love so much that you're listening to this and that you've continued to listen. Please reach out, please message us. I just had a conversation with one of our listeners who drives a truck all around this country, and he had a chance to be in a webinar with Sean Astin, and we were talking about that beforehand, and then he called me up on Facebook, and we had like a 30-minute conversation together, and it was just so cool to catch up with him and to meet people through this, and we really appreciate that so much more than you could ever know. So thank you. And I would be remiss if you both mentioned the network as well. I would be remiss if I didn't say thank you so much to Jeremy for having me along for this ride. Yeah. You know, the two of us got to kind of start this thing together, and between the network and where it's grown, we, gosh, 700, 800 episodes, whatever we have amongst our shows. This wouldn't have been possible if we wouldn't have just sat down and been dopey together in front of a microphone and talked about movies. So thank you to Jeremy, and thank you to the network. Speaking of the network, we got to promote our next show, our 101st episode. We have to bring on someone from the network for that. We're going to invite back Brandon Davis for our classic perspective on 101 Dalmatians. You knew we had to do that for our 101st
episode. 101 episodes. It's 101 Dalmatians.
absolutely. And then 102 Dalmatians. Actually, Kevin's going to come back. No, I'm completely kidding. I'm kidding.
Too many dogs.
Too many dogs. But we can't wait to share with you what we have coming up, because we're just going to keep the thing moving as we can. And thank you so much for the 100 episodes. If you have not already, if you're fans of Bill and Jason and Kevin, you're listening to this for the first time and you're like, why are they all just waxing on about their 100 episodes? Please hit that subscribe button and go back and listen to the other 99 episodes that we have posted on any podcast platform. You can also follow us on social media and reach out to us there. You can find us on Beyond the Mouse Podcast on Facebook or Beyond the Mouse Pod on Instagram, Beyond Mouse on Twitter. We are part of NPR Illinois Community Voices, so you can find us on nprillinois.org as well. And of course, we are part of the Front Row Network. You can find them by searching the Front Row Network on any social media feed. Also, Front Row Reviews with a Z on Twitter. And again, can't say it enough. I know I say it a lot. I truly mean it deep in my heart. Thank you. Thank you to the two of you. Thank you to the listeners. Thank you, especially this episode, to Kevin, Bill, and Jason. It meant the world to us. So for Beyond the Mouse, I am Craig.
I'm Vanessa.
And I'm Brett.
And we will see you real soon in the Front Row. Maybe at episode 200.
Gosh.
I don't know if I could do a goofy impression on a goofy episode. Like, good for you, good.
You,
it was good.
Special sauce.